Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia. Today's conversation centres on what many people are experiencing, but few truly understand, the overloaded mind. Our world today is full of constant notifications, endless scrolling, overstimulation, information overload, and pressure to always be switched on. Many people are feeling mentally exhausted. They're distracted, emotionally drained, and unable to focus, yet they often blame themselves rather than recognizing the impact the modern world is having on the brain. Attention spans are shrinking, memory feels weaker, and people are struggling to stay present, think clearly, or even switch off mentally. So what is really happening to our minds? Today's guest is no stranger to the Healthy Debate Show, and he brings a fascinating perspective to this conversation. Tansel Ali is a 4-times Australian memory champion, international best-selling author, strategic advisor, and expert in cognitive performance and memory training. For more than 2 decades, he has worked with individuals and organizations around the world, helping people strengthen memory, sharpen focus, and better understand how the brain performs under pressure. Tansel, it's such a pleasure to welcome you back to the show.
Thanks for having me back. Cheers.
It's my pleasure. Tansel, when you look at society today, do you think people's minds are more overloaded than ever before?
Yeah, I definitely think it is because, as you mentioned earlier, you hit the nail on the head. We're getting more and more distracted, emotionally drained. You know, there's attention being pulled into so many areas, not just work. Before it was just work. Now it's like looking at socials, and you know, it's pulling us into different directions of, you know, fashion and food and all these, you know, topics that we don't even think about in general, and it's just constantly bombarding us. So yeah, definitely people's minds are more overloaded. And what that does is essentially tires the brain. So when you do, you know, end up on the couch 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock when you get home, you're absolutely exhausted without even doing anything physical. So yeah, definitely. I've seen a lot of people coming to me because of that reason as well.
Yes, and I feel the same way. And that's such an important point because people are carrying mental overload constantly now. Attention is being pulled in so many directions, as you pointed out, throughout the day, and that the brain rarely gets a moment to properly switch off and recover. So even without physical activity, I'm glad you mentioned that. I think people can end up feeling emotionally and mentally exhausted by the evening or even during the day. I mean, I've experienced that myself, and I think many people listening will really relate to that feeling. And we are constantly surrounded by notifications and scrolling, and we've all, I think, experienced that doom scrolling as well at some point until we've stopped ourselves mentally. And that information overload. So what effect is this having on the brain and our ability to focus?
Yeah, the effect it has generally is because we've got so many little mental narratives going on from these information that's presented to us, it distracts us from what we really need to do, like particular tasks or even thinking in general. Because if our thinking is decaying, how is that impacting the way we live? For example, problem solving or decision making. You know, I work with a lot of leaders that have to make these choices, and if they're impacted mentally, they can't run their organization or they can't lead teams effectively. So it's got an impact there. For everyday people that are at home with their families and stuff like that, they're not all there. with their family. You know, they're sitting down with their kids on the table and they're on their phones as well. I mean, what message does that send to the children, as well as the spouses, things like that? And this is just normal, and we take it for normal as well. We can go to restaurants and see couples on the table, but they're both on their phones. You know, you don't see conversations happening, and it's sort of, look, I've got nothing against that. It does look a bit weird from, I mean, I am old now, right? So I'm back when, before there were phones like this. But I do understand that there are times where we need to be at one with one another, or one with nature. Things like that, really appreciate and be grateful for our current present. So what I feel is happening is because of all these notifications and scrolling, the mind is either in the past or it's in the future. It's never really in the present, because what you're doing in the present is you're scrolling and you're looking at, like I said, whether it's fashion or, you know, people that look good and then saying, oh, I want to look like that, or why aren't I like that? So it's going, you know, it's either giving you stress or anxiety. So that's what's happening.
And I think that's such a powerful point that you've brought up there, because the mind is constantly overloaded. Even when people try to switch off, it's quite a challenge to now. Some people I know don't even know how to switch off anymore. And the mind is, as you said, constantly being pulled into these pressures and comparisons and worry or distraction, or even when someone is physically in the moment, mentally they can be somewhere completely different, and over time that can create a lot of internal stress and anxiety and disconnection without people even realizing it. And I think many listeners will recognize themselves in what you've just said. I know, as I have said earlier, I have experienced it myself. So many people feel mentally exhausted even when they haven't physically done very much. I know that you've already mentioned that it's a distraction, but why are we being so drawn to look at that fashion or look at what's being, you know, cooked up? Or what do you think is drawing us to that?
Yeah, it's actually quite simple. It's energy, right? We're using up energy. So if we're seeing, you know, 50 things pop up in the morning, then our brain is looking at each of those things. You know, a lot of them may be nothing, but a few of them might be, you know, massive stories in your head, and it might evoke some sort of an emotion, and that takes a little mental toll. Now, you do that throughout the day, right? That uses up a lot of energy, and because it uses up a lot of energy mentally, physically, you're impacted from it as well. So think of a time where you've had some sort of an experience where you've been so stressed, there's a story playing in your mind, and you just feel so tired afterwards, right? It's the same exact thing, but it's almost like cuts by a thousand knives, or whatever it's called, right? Death by a thousand cuts. So it's similar to that, where you're using the whole day to lose your energy. Whereas if you know how to manage that, then you can just keep going.
I think the way that you've explained it makes so much sense, because people often underestimate how mentally draining constant stimulation can be. Every notification or thought or emotion or internal story takes a small amount of energy, and over time that builds into exhaustion without people fully realizing why they feel so depleted. And also, I think your point about stress affecting us physically is really important, because the mind and body are constantly working together. When we learn to manage our attention and energy better, it can completely change how we feel emotionally. So do you believe our attention spans are genuinely getting shorter?
Yeah, look, Belinda, the goldfish are laughing at us right now. That's what I reckon. they're laughing at us going, who are these guys? I mean, we're terrible. But now, look, they are, but they're also not as well. I'm also an optimist as well, because there's, you know, people like yourself that raise awareness to this. And there's a lot of people out there that try and help people. with what's going on, and more people are aware now, right? And because more people are aware, they're doing things out of the ordinary. So, for example, there's a minimalist, you know, phone movement where people are getting what's called dumb phones now, and they're using that. So no social media, no scrolling, whatever. There's a growing group of that. Yes, there's a massive growing group of people that are, you know, attention spans are getting shorter as well. So it's going in all directions. So what we need to do is just create more of this sort of content, or get outreach more and more for our message, because the more people know, the more they can start to look at how to manage these and take control of their life. Because if they're not managing their attention is essentially managing them, and it's running their life. And that's the biggest challenge right now, is people using it as an outlet. You know, when I say outlet, like, could be social media or things that grab our attention, rather than restricting it and trying to live and do the things they need to be able to do.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing that, because that's such a valuable point that you've shared there. I think that awareness is such an important point. And because awareness is really the beginning of change, isn't it? The fact that more people are now recognizing the impact attention overload is having on their mental health and their relationships and daily lives means conversations like this really do matter. And I also love what you said about attention either managing us or learning to manage it. I think that's brilliant, because that really is one of the biggest challenges of modern life. And hopefully the more these conversations happen, the more people will start becoming intentional again, and about where they place their energy and focus. But there are many people say they feel distracted all the time. So what is actually happening cognitively when the brain is overstimulated?
Yeah, it's a good question, because if the brain is overstimulated, it's essentially, you know, being somewhere where it's not meant to be. So, and if people are distracted for many different reasons as well, so it could be, like I said, a form of getaway from the real life where they're just under so much stress. Or it's something I experience in the corporate world, people just trying to get away from the tasks that they're really trying to do as procrastination. Yeah. So that happens as well. So distraction comes in many forms, but cognitively, when the brain is overstimulated, it's overprocessing essentially. And sometimes, as you know, we create narratives in the brain. Sometimes it's delving deeper into those narratives as well, which then affect us emotionally. And then, you know, the effect from that obviously is, you know, we can get sadness and depressed and, you know, anxiety, stress, all of that sort of stuff as well. So that's where it sort of comes full circle.
That's so true. And thank you once again for sharing that, because I think definitely, I think that's such another important explanation, because distraction is not always just about the entertainment or scrolling. Sometimes it's avoidance, as you mentioned, and emotional overwhelm, stress, or even trying to escape what's happening internally. I think the mind becomes overstimulated for long periods of time. Those internal narratives can become louder and more emotionally draining, which then impacts mental well-being overall. So thank you so much, Tansel, for your valuable insights so far. We're going to take a short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. Stay with us, we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong? I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and today I'm joined by the incredible Tanzil Ali as we explore memory, focus, overstimulation, and what the modern world is doing to the human mind. Welcome back, Tanzil.
Thanks for having me back.
Thank you. Now, Tanzil, why can people often remember painful emotional experiences so clearly, yet forget everyday things like names, tasks, or where they left something?
Yeah, well, painful emotional experiences leaves a mark. So we're going to remember that because there's a massive story, there's a physical mark as well. You know, if there is something there as well that's painful. I mean, I experienced a lot in my life as well, having, you know, regular fixture in hospitals through my illness and operations and stuff. So you tend to remember that stuff. But everyday things like names, tasks, they're very abstract. And if the brain can't translate it, it doesn't remember it. Right, and that translation layer in memory is called encoding. So in order to remember things like names, we need to be able to create some sort of an encoding mechanism that helps us remember it and helps us retain it, just like the emotional experiences. Now, it doesn't have to get painful, or it doesn't have to be super duper exciting emotional experience just to remember a task, but we could use the same process. So at the moment, that's not happening, which is why people forget.
It's fascinating as well, because so many people instantly assume poor memory means something is wrong with them intellectually, when actually the brain often just hasn't attached enough meaning or connection to that information. And I believe what you're saying about emotional experiences staying with us makes complete sense, because those moments are deeply encoded within us. I also think this explains why people remember conversations and feelings or stressful moments from years ago, yet forget simple daily tasks almost instantly. I'm still practicing with my memory as well, and it really highlights how important attention, emotion, and association are when it comes to memory. So what role, and I think a part of that, where it stays with you, is the dopamine levels. So what role does dopamine and instant gratification play in the way we think and retain information?
I'm glad you asked that question, because people that I've spoken to, a lot have negative things to say about dopamine as well. But the way that I look at it is how you use these instant gratifications and dopamine, especially for retaining and learning. So for example, the way that I got into memory, especially learning about memory and becoming an expert, wasn't reading books or doing courses. Even though I did that, it was playing games, right? Memory games, and like memorizing playing cards and things like that, because it was fun. So I got more of a dopamine hit every time I did that. And because I did that, instant gratification, right? I just wanted to play again and again and again. And that resulted in me learning so much more about memory than I could from books. right? So I've got a dopamine hit. The problem here is what people use it for as well. So if they're scrolling on their phone and getting a dopamine hit, but the scrolling isn't giving them any value, that's the problem, right? So we want to change it so that if you ever want to, you know, do a particular task or, you know, learn something or be able to do something that you've always wanted, attach a high dopamine task to it, like gamification or something like that, so you can actually do the thing rather than be bored by it. So that's what I've sort of learned from that. And also in the way we think and retain information as well, because if you can make it less boring and more fun, then you get more of a dopamine hit there as well. So as I mentioned, if you make the dopamine hit for something that is not effective for you, then that's going to be the problem. And I think classic example is gambling as well. You know, massive dopamine hit for something that is, you know, life threatening essentially to families and individuals.
It's such an important distinction there, because dopamine itself isn't the problem, it's what we attach it to. I think that's brilliant that you shared that. And what you're describing really shows how learning becomes far more effective when there's enjoyment and engagement and reward involved. And also, I think many people will relate to the idea that we repeat what gives us quick gratifications, which is why scrolling can become so addictive. And as you mentioned, the gambling as well. So using that same mechanism in a healthier, more intentional way through things like gamification can actually be incredibly powerful. So thank you for sharing that. And how much does stress and anxiety affect memory and cognitive performance?
Yeah, definitely a lot. I mean, there's been times where, you know, as a memory champion, I've been under a lot of stress driving, and I've had to say to my wife next to me, it's like, how do we get home from here? Even though it's the same route we've been using for years, right? So it can affect even the person with the best memory in the world, right? So I'm not talking about me, I'm talking about anyone in general. So yeah, it's got a massive effect because it's physiological as well. So the trick there is not to sort of say, oh, I'm not going to be stressed, because that's, you know, you're going to be put in scenarios where you will encounter stress and anxiety because we are humans. So I guess the trick there is, it's like, okay, what do you do when it happens, right? And the thing that I've learned, which helped me, was to just breathe and relax, right? Because generally when we stress, we can get tense all of a sudden, and that tension can actually have a negative effect. That's what we do naturally, but the tension has a negative effect. So I found that by doing the opposite of relaxing, just absolutely helped me as well. And which is why a lot of people meditate and, you know, do stillness. And, you know, there's times where I just won't do anything, you know, and just sit. And I found that very sort of cathartic as well. Not a lot of people can do that, but I've spent, you know, many hours and days in hospital just sitting there doing nothing. So I've sort of learned how to utilize that skill. So yeah, stress and anxiety has massive effect on memory and cognitive performance. But yeah, managing that is really the key, because you're going to encounter it.
Absolutely. And I actually think that's really reassuring for people to hear, because it shows that stress and anxiety can affect anyone cognitively, regardless of how strong their memory or focus usually is. But I also love the point you made about not trying to eliminate stress completely, but instead learning how to respond to it differently. That's such an important point. The idea we can slow down, we can relax our body, we can sit still, but it does take practice. But it's there, it's possible for us to take control. So do you think now that technology, especially AI, is making people mentally lazier, maybe even causing that anxiety, or simply mental, is a mental overload?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's really two camps. One camp is a lot bigger than the other, and it's people that just almost outsource their brain to AI. It's like, write this for me, do this, do that. Whereas, you could be writing from your own brain, for example. Classic example is social media, right? And yes, AI can help us write a year's worth of social media posts, right? But are you really using your brain? So I look at this as, yes, we can use a car to drive wherever we want really quickly, or you can exercise and walk somewhere, 10 minutes. You can't walk somewhere for 7 hours, right? That's what AI is good for. But if you can at least walk for, half an hour or whatever, that's good for you. So that's how I see it as well. Like all my writing online, I actually do use my brain, right? Use myself to write, even with my mistakes, because the more mistakes you make now, people look at it and go, wow, he's not AI. This is great. So I think in time, more and more people start to appreciate authenticity and mistakes of being human rather than this perfectly drafted document or post in AI. So yes, it is making some people lazier, but it's also helping a ton of people as well. Like even me, I use it for memory training, analyzing results and say, okay, where do we go from here? I use it to analyze my writing as well and say, okay, where can I boost this and make it even better? So there's benefits, and there's, cons, obviously. It's about knowing what's going to work for you and your brain rather than take it away from you. I think that's the distinction.
I love that you said sometimes the imperfections are there, and that's individuality and a natural way someone communicates rather than just being perfect in any way and being seen that you're using AI constantly. If you're using it in a balanced way, that's really helpful. But you spoke about writing as well and having that individuality, that authenticity, and you pointed out that AI should be used as a tool to support your thinking rather than replace it completely. But what happens to creativity and deep thinking when someone is constantly distracted?
Yeah, it's I love this question because I'm a massive, advocate of deep thinking and slowness as well. Even though people come to me to learn fast or remember quickly, things like that, I love the deeper thinking part. And this is the part where AI is not very useful, because we just need time to delve deeper. There have been conversations with clients where I've spent an hour, but the best parts come towards the end, or sometimes gone for 2 hours. So creativity, essentially, once you're distracted, then you have to start again. So it interrupts, right? So if you're constantly distracted, you're not going to delve deeper because you're being distracted. The brain, it takes the brain, I think they researched this and say it takes 20 minutes to get back to, your previous form again after distraction. I mean, it's insane, right? Whereas if you have a good run without distraction, you can really dig deep and think, then sometimes that's where the gold is as well. So, but getting back to the earlier type of questions, is if your attention's out of whack, that's going to affect your deep thinking as well, because you're constantly going to be opening up a new browser or checking your phone every 7 minutes or something like that. So yeah, deep thinking happens if you allow it to happen, right? And that's where the deep creativity is as well. Whereas if you don't allow it, you'll never get to those levels.
I also think many people don't realize how much attention fragmentation impacts not only productivity, but depth and creativity and even that self-awareness. So thank you so much, Tansel, for sharing. We're going to take another short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back. Please don't go anywhere.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative. Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and we're continuing this fascinating conversation with the incredible Tansel Ali, discussing the overloaded mind, attention, memory, and mental performance in the digital age. Welcome back, Tansel.
Thank you.
Now, Tansel, are younger generations being affected differently by information overload compared to the older generation?
Yeah, I think they are, because they grew up in an era where there's a ton of information.
Yeah.
You know, whereas in my day, yeah, there was information everywhere too, but it wasn't in our face, you know, multiple times a day. You know, we did sort of one thing at a time, and multitasking wasn't even a thing really. But younger generations now, because they grew up on this, I think they're more in tune to it as well. So now the question is, you know, what are they doing with that information? Is it really impacting them, or are they sort of immune to it? You know, so I'm interested in this question as well, because we naturally think that information overload is going to be the same thing as us, right? But younger people are a bit more, like I said, a bit more used to it. The brains are, you know, have been used to this information. So, it will impact them in some way, but to what extent, I actually personally don't know. I'd love to do more research in this area.
Yeah.
As we spoke about, things like social media, you know, doom scrolling, they're, you know, strong cases that, yeah, it does impact attention and learning and things like that. But overall, again, it's a question I'm really interested in myself as well.
It's really interesting, because where you pointed out younger generations have grown up with a completely different relationship to information and stimulation, what feels overwhelming to the older generations can feel normal to them because it's all they've ever known. But I also think the long-term emotional and cognitive impact is something we're still all learning, and especially around attention and anxiety and focus and that connection. So for someone listening who feels mentally scattered or overwhelmed most days, what practical steps would you encourage them to start with?
Yeah, what I usually tell my clients is just list all the things that are happening in your life in just one day, right? Just make a little mental log. I know it's a weird sort of request, but I just say just list it, whatever's there. So I get them to do this exercise, and then I say, okay, with each of those things that you've listed, is it taking up your energy? Is it giving you energy? Or is it neutral, right? As soon as you start sort of auditing, I guess, your day, you might find that there's a lot of things on there taking up your energy, right? That doesn't need to be there, right? Yeah. So sometimes we don't know what we don't know, right? And then say, I'm feeling mentally scattered or overwhelmed. So if you actually do an audit, you could see potentially what's going on. Maybe not everything, but at least you'll give yourself a really good go of, wow, I've identified three things that I can get rid of now that can help me, you know, being around toxic people or checking emails every 5 minutes. You don't need to do that, right? Or maybe putting my phone away, you know, during lunch or whatever, right? So doing an audit, identifying where, you know, the energy taking, you know, items are, and then culling a few of them. And, you know, if you keep doing that, then you'll get to a spot where, you know, you've probably got more energy and you start identifying what's going to give you energy. Then you move forward from there. So it's a stage-by-stage process, but I'd say just start, again, identifying and then move on from there.
And that's such a powerful exercise because most people never stop to consciously look at where their mental and emotional energy is going throughout the day. And sometimes people feel overwhelmed without realizing how many small things are really quietly draining them. So I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And finally, Denzel, what message do you think people most need to hear about protecting and strengthening their minds in today's world?
Wow, what a question. Look, I'd say firstly is that it is possible to strengthen your mind. A lot of people don't believe it is, that I've spoken to, especially memory, right? So first, believe that it's possible. And then second, go out and learn. Like, we've got everything we need at our disposal right now. We've got all the content, we've got all the books, we've got all the people. I mean, there's podcasts like this, right? We've got everything. Obviously, you don't want to overwhelm the brain, but you've got to start somewhere. Right, so just pick the one thing, get into it, learn a little bit about your brain each day, and then you'll start to, you know, shift into something more positive. I mean, that's how I started. I started with one thing, which led to another thing, which led to another thing, and, you know, almost 25 years later, here we're talking about it, right? So, yeah, it's not going to come overnight, but if you could start now, then in a year's time, you'll be thanking yourself that you have started.
Absolutely. And what a beautiful note to end the show with. Denzel, thank you so much for joining me again today. This has been such an insightful and important conversation, particularly in a world where so many people are silently struggling with that overstimulation, mental exhaustion, and difficulty focusing. I think today's discussion will help many listeners better understand what is happening within their minds and remind them that constantly feeling distracted or overwhelmed does not mean they are failing. It means their brains are under pressure in ways many people still don't fully recognize. Now, Denzel, where can people connect with you if they want to learn more?
Yeah, straight to my website, denzelali.com. So TANSELALI.com. Yeah, you can reach out, and happy to sort of chat about this and anything else, really.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much. And thank you to everyone listening to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. If today's conversation resonated with you, please do share it with someone who may benefit from hearing it. To close today's episode, I've chosen a part from the song Mad World by Gary Jules. Until next time, take care of yourself and each other.
All around me are familiar faces, worn out places, worn out faces, bright and early for the daily races, going nowhere, going nowhere. Their tears are filling up their glasses, no expression, no expression. Hide my head, I wanna drown my sorrow, no tomorrow, no tomorrow. And I find it kind of funny, I find it kind of sad, the dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take, when people run in circles, it's a very, very